Okay, so let's start. First of all, Happy New Year to everyone. As you have seen, we are having some technical issues for this press briefing of the UN Information Service here in Geneva on today, Tuesday, 6th of January. I am really sorry for this, and I'm sorry for the delay, especially today as we are restarting our business. But bear with us, and at least you can hear what we can tell you today, what we can announce today. First of all, let me just take the first minutes to inform you. I mean, this has been a very loaded holiday period. I know that you've been working a lot and covering lots of things. And of course, I would like to start by saying that as you have surely seen, the Director General of the UN Office at Geneva has expressed his condolences to the victims of the terrible accident that happened over the New Year's Eve and day in Crans-Montana. And I also wanted to inform you that following some of the questions you've asked us, the UN flag, the Director General, in consultation with the host country authorities, has decided to fly the flag of the United Nations at half-mast on Friday, 9th of January, as a mark of respect for the victims of the fire, the tragic fire in Crans-Montana. And we will probably open also a condolence book. But just wanted to tell you, because some of you had asked me whether we would do such a thing, and we will, as we are here in Switzerland, our host country. So that was just something I wanted to tell you. Let's start with the briefing topic. We have today OHCHR, Ravines, with us to tell us about the U.S. intervention in Venezuela. And about that, I would like to recall that the Secretary General has put out a statement on the 3rd of January when the events unfolded. And yesterday, as you know, there was a meeting of the Security Council on the situation in Venezuela. The Secretary General's statement was read by Mrs. Di Carlo, and he said that he was deeply concerned about the possible intensification of instability in Venezuela, the potential impact on the region, and the precedent the U.S. military operation may set for how relations between and among states are conducted. The Secretary General also added that he remains deeply concerned that rules of international law have not been respected with regard to the military intervention of the 3rd of January. He highlighted that the Charter of the UN, the UN Charter, enshrines the prohibition of the threat or use of force against the territorial integrity or political interdependence of any member state. And he said that it's possible to prevent a wider and more destructive conflagration. He called on all Venezuelan actors to engage in an inclusive democratic dialogue in which all sectors of society can determine their future. And he further urged Venezuela's neighbors and the international community broadly to act in a spirit of solidarity and in adherence to the principles, laws, and rules erected to promote peaceful coexistence. The statement, the remarks of the Secretary General read by USG Di Carlo have been distributed to you. And this morning we have Ravina to tell us more on the side of the Human Rights Office. Please, Ravina.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. And let me take this opportunity to wish all of you in the room and online a peaceful and healthful new year. And look forward to, my team and I look forward to working with you very closely this year. On the U.S. Intervention in Venezuela, we are deeply worried about the situation in Venezuela following the U.S. military operation over the weekend. It is clear that the operation undermined a fundamental principle of international law, that states must not threaten or use force against the territorial integrity or political independence of any state. The U.S. has justified its intervention on the grounds of the Venezuelan government's longstanding and appalling human rights record. But accountability for human rights violations cannot be achieved by unilateral military intervention in violation of international law. The people of Venezuela deserve accountability through a fair, victim-centered process. As has been clear in the UN Human Rights Office's consistent reporting on the continued deterioration of the situation in Venezuela for about a decade, the rights of the Venezuelan people have been violated for too long. We fear that the current instability and further militarization in the country resulting from the US intervention will only make the situation worse. The state of emergency declared by the Venezuelan authorities that took effect on Saturday raises concerns, as it authorizes restrictions on free movement of people, the seizure of property necessary for national defense, and the suspension of the right to assembly and to protest, among other measures. UN Human Rights Chief Volker Türk calls on the US and the Venezuelan authority, as well as the international community, to ensure full respect for international law, including human rights. The future of Venezuela must be determined by the Venezuelan people alone, with full respect for their human rights, including the right to self-determination and sovereignty over their lives and their resources.
Thank you very much, Ravina. And I understand we also have the image now, which is good. So I'll open the floor to questions now, if any in the room. Nina?
Yeah. Thank you, Ravina. I was wondering if you could say a little bit more about the, you say this undermined, seems to have undermined international law. In what respect? Because this is claiming that this is a law enforcement operation. Is that incorrect? Could you say something about their, the way they are trying to legitimize this operation? And if it actually does stand up in the face of international law? Thanks.
Thank you, Nina. Indeed, as the High Commissioner has said, this operation violates a fundamental principle of international law. It violates the UN Charter. The Charter states that states must not threaten or use force against the territorial integrity or political independence of any state. And this is what we are seeing. Now, using human rights arguments as a justification for this kind of military intervention is unacceptable. The High Commissioner has said that, he said yesterday in an opinion piece that he had published, that a narrative is emerging that seeks to justify the U.S. military intervention as a response to the Maduro government's appalling human rights record. But far from being a victory for human rights, this military intervention, which is in contravention of Venezuelan sovereignty and the UN Charter, damages the architecture of international security, making every country less safe. And no amount of deception or distraction can alter these facts.
Thank you very much. Efe?
Hi. I wonder if your office have talked with the government, the Venezuela government, with the new president, and with the people of Venezuela, if you have any assessment of the situation, of the human rights situation, or of the opinions of the government. Thank you.
Thank you. We have not been in touch with, over the past few days, we have not been in touch with the government. However, we are constantly in touch with civil society, human rights defenders, both inside and outside the country. And we're trying to establish what is happening on the ground. Now, as you know, we were actually expelled from the country. Trying to remember when that was. I believe it was in February or March of last year. And since for the past couple of months, we've had no one in the country. We've been monitoring the situation from Panama. So we are in touch with civil society. We're trying to establish the facts on the ground. As I said, we are worried about the establishment of this decree, the state of external commotion, because it authorizes a lot of measures that could be instrumentalized to further suppress the human rights of the people of Venezuela. And we're particularly concerned given the record that the government has in suppressing free speech, protest, freedom of assembly, using the pretext of national security.
Thank you very much. Sorry, I thought Jeremy had. You don't know. Okay, Nick.
Thank you. Ravina, you're saying you're calling on the United States to respect Venezuelan sovereignty, but President Trump has made it clear that he's in control, he's running the state, so they're not respecting it. The administration has expressed its intention to take military action against other states, including potentially Greenland. What action do you think the international community should be taking in response to these positions? Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. On what action the international community should be taking, I think it's really important that there is clarity. Let us not pretend that this is an action taken in defense of human rights of anyone. This is an action that was taken in contravention of international law, and that is clear, and the international community needs to come together with one voice to insist on that, to make that clear, that this is an action that was in contravention of the international law that was set up by member states, the UN Charter that was set up by member states, and this is a point that the Secretary General has also made. And I'll repeat again what it says. It says that states must not threaten or use force against the territorial integrity or political independence of any state. And we have seen the use of force, and we are also seeing further threats.
Yeah, absolutely. That was also stated yesterday by the spokesperson of the Secretary General. The question here is member states respecting and uphold the laws and the charter that they themselves have put into play, and not as a la carte menu, but a whole.
Sorry, just on the situation in Venezuela and who's governing, this is where we have invoked the right to self-determination of the people of Venezuela. The future of Venezuela must be determined by its people. That is clear.
Nina.
I was wondering if anyone else online might want to chime in about the implications of this on the humanitarian side, if what kind of planning is being done, if we're expecting to see a mass outflow of more refugees, and how the UN system, humanitarian community could respond to this. Thank you.
Thank you, Nina. We have Jens in the room. I'm looking at him, but also we have Eugene online for UNHCR. I don't know, I think Omondi is also on the line. So, looking at the platform colleagues, if you want to intervene, can you sit here, Jens? It's better for the camera. I'm just looking also at colleagues online. If there is anything that they want to add, I'll give the floor to Jens for that.
Sorry, please go ahead. While we're waiting for Jens to settle in, colleagues have just confirmed it was February 2024 when we were expelled from the country. Yeah, just to confirm that.
Good morning, Happy New Year, Bonne année. What's been done in preparation was already done in the past. As you know, we have been responding to the humanitarian situation in Venezuela for a number of years. We do have a plan that was established late last year that identifies almost 8 million people, a quarter of the population, being in need of humanitarian assistance. We have a response plan that is active this year, asking for approximately $600 million US dollars. In the prioritization exercise that all response plans went through, of the nearly 8 million people, 900,000 are considered in very high categories of multi-sectoral need. What does that mean? That means that they need basically food, nutrition, education, health services, basically all the things that the state of Venezuela has not been able to provide to its citizens for a number of years, which has meant that these large groups of people have kind of dropped out the bottom and into category of humanitarian need. Venezuela also last year was one of the worst or least funded response plans, sadly, so that already had an impact last year. But we did reach approximately 2 million in the course of the year. So there is a long-term plan which deals with these things. That's not If you look at it, it's very dramatic what has happened on a political level, of course, absolutely, in Venezuela. But for the broad masses of people, their humanitarian day-to-day situation hasn't changed that radically, has it? So the situation as it was immediately before has continues till this day. And that is the basis for our work on the humanitarian side going forward this year.
Thanks a lot, Jens. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, thank you, Jens. I just want to follow up because the U.S. and OCHA, you announced a deal right before the holidays about the U.S. now providing assistance through OCHA and giving a list of countries that they were going to provide assistance to. I can't remember. I don't think Venezuela was on that list. What does that mean that the U.S. assistance, which has been very important for the U.N. system, is not going to go to Venezuela? Or do you expect that to change now if they're taking over control of the country? Thank you.
On the latter part of your question, I have no idea. I mean, that's for the U.S. administration to make that call. And just on the announcement that we made just before the New Year, well, it's one donor, right? It's one donor giving a very substantial or pledging a very substantial amount for a number of crisis countries that they have focused on and where we also focus our efforts. But that is not an exhaustive list of neither donors nor of countries in need, right? So moving forward, of course, we are trying to mobilize the entire donor base to step up, including for our 600 million response plan in Venezuela.
Thank you very much, Jens. Yes?
I don't know if Eugene maybe could answer this question. I wonder if the refugees that are outside Venezuela, if the situation of them is changing, if they are trying to go back, if they have hopes, or nothing has really changed.
Eugene, I see you are connected. I don't know if you want to take this up now or come back to that later on. I can see you put your camera on. We can see you. Go ahead.
Thank you very much for it. Your question, Nina. To answer your question, based on information available at this time, there are no particular reports of a displacement or cross-border movement linked to the recent events. Of course, we're closely monitoring the situation and the border cross-border movement, and then we stand together with other UN agencies and humanitarian partners to support emergency relief effort and to protect displaced people in need as required. Of course, we're working closely with the OCHA and other UN partners. But for the time being, we don't see any major displacement and then cross-border movement.
Thank you very much, Eugene. Okay, let me go to the platform. I see Moussa. Moussa, si bonjour, Moussa. Bonne année.
Bonjour.
Vous voulez poser une question?
Vous êtes là? Vous m'entendez?
Oui, oui, on vous entend. Allez-y.
Oui, alors j'ai vu la déclaration concernant le Venezuela. Je n'ai pas vu une expression comme agression américaine contre un pays indépendant. Je n'ai pas pu m'empêcher de comparer entre cette déclaration et les différentes déclarations concernant l'attaque russe contre l'Ukraine. Vous avez nommé ce qui s'est passé en Venezuela comme opération militaire, si j'ai bien compris. À ma grande surprise, c'est le même terme utilisé par les Russes contre l'Ukraine. Pour vous, ce qui s'est passé, c'est une opération militaire ou c'est une agression d'un État qui a enlevé un président d'un État souverain. La plupart de la déclaration Rabina parle de droits de l'homme à l'intérieur du Venezuela aujourd'hui, qui est tout à fait justifiable dans une situation normale. Mais là, on a une situation, donc il y a un pays, un président qui a bafoué les droits internationaux. À mon avis, la première victime de ce qui s'est passé, c'est les Nations Unies. Et là, vous avez une déclaration vraiment, à mon avis, décevante. Est-ce que vous pouvez me dire si c'est une agression? Pourquoi on ne compare pas, ou bien on ne fait pas la comparaison entre... quelle est la différence, en fait, entre l'agression russe en Ukraine et ce qui s'est passé au Venezuela pour vous? Merci.
Ok, Moussa, je pense que l'analyse des faits est... je la laisse à vous. Je pense que le secrétaire général a été extrêmement clair, vraiment extrêmement clair sur la préoccupation, avant tout sur les concerns, sa préoccupation pour ce qui s'est passé et le fait de mettre vraiment en avant le fait qu'ici on n'a pas respecté les droits internationaux. On a été vraiment très clair sur ça. Les comparaisons, je vous les laisse, mais c'est clair que le secrétaire général a été, je pense, très fort, très, très important. Les déclarations du secrétaire général sont très fortes, très importantes. Et je pense qu'on a vraiment ici une question de revenir à l'importance du respect de la Charte des Nations Unies et du droit international. Et ça, ça a été dit d'une façon très, très claire. Pour ce qui concerne ce que vous dites par rapport à l'organisation qui serait une victime de cette situation, moi je pense qu'il faut qu'on regarde déjà quelle organisation. Effectivement, ici on a une question hier au Conseil de sécurité, c'est clair qu'il y a eu, comme il y a eu dans les dernières années, on a vu en différentes situations des contrastes, des incapacités de prendre des résolutions qui sont unanimes, mais il y a eu aussi beaucoup de support pour les droits internationaux, pour la charte. Beaucoup de pays se sont exprimés dans ce sens. Et pour nous, vraiment, le plus important, c'est de continuer à travailler, à s'exprimer, à essayer d'aider à la transition et, comme j'ai dit aussi, d'appeler au respect du droit international et de la Charte des Nations Unies, qui sont vraiment l'essentiel ici, les points essentiels de la situation. Je ne sais pas, Ravina, si tu veux rajouter quelque chose. Je pense que c'est vraiment, vraiment une question de ça. Après, de nouveau, les comparaisons, je vous les laisse, mais c'est important de vraiment ressouligner de façon très forte. On a besoin de revenir au respect du droit international et de la Charte de l'ONU. Moussa.
Oui, je répète ma question pour Ravina, s'il vous plaît. Est-ce que pour vous, c'est une agression ou pas? Merci beaucoup.
Thanks, Moussa. I don't know if you're asking about an analysis based on international law. I understood. Thank you, Alessandra. I understood the question, but I'm trying to understand what's behind it. Are you asking for an analysis under international law or a statement of some sort? What I said in the statement is clear, that this undermines a fundamental principle. The U.S. military operation over the weekend in Venezuela undermines a fundamental principle of international law, that states must not threaten or use force against the territorial integrity or political independence of any state. The High Commissioner is also very clear about what this is and what it isn't. This is not an attempt to defend human rights. This is a violation of international law. It is an act that makes all states less safe around the world. And you asked also about this, you know, being an attack against the United Nations. Indeed, it sends a signal that the powerful can do whatever they like, and it weakens the mechanism that we have to prevent further conflict, to prevent even a third world war, namely the United Nations. And this is why we're calling on all states to speak with one voice in defense of the UN Charter and in defense of international law.
Merci beaucoup, Ravina. Are there any other questions? Yes.
Yes, regarding to my first question, as you have been expelled from the country, I don't know if you think that maybe with the new situation and the influence of the United States, even if you condemn the operation, if you think maybe you can go back and establish your operations there again.
Thank you. No, indeed, we've made every possible effort to reestablish our presence in the country over the past almost 2 years now. And we do not believe in closing the door ever. We're always open to constructive engagement. We're always open to going in and reestablishing a presence. The High Commissioner said in a speech last month that we do not believe in points of no return. So we are there for the people of Venezuela. We're doing what we can remotely from Panama to monitor the situation. But of course, we're always ready to go back in.
Thank you very much.
So you would be open to talk with the United States government, even if you condemn this situation?
Always. We are always open to talking, even where we disagree, especially when we disagree. We would like to have a conversation.
Absolutely. Okay, so I don't see. Bodhi, you have a question?
Yes, thank you. But I wondered what I saw on Venezuela is the same reaction military of decapitation strategy, same to the Russian has done in the first of all in the war Ukraine in the beginning of the war, and the UN agencies has immediately a response on any special meeting or a special conference on the Human Rights Council extra. And what are the next steps on your reaction for this violation on Venezuela? For you or for Alessandro? Your response, next response, is that going to be the same on the response on the Ukraine war, or you have no more response for the next step?
I think that is, you know, the member states, especially for the Security Council, they are really they take their own decisions in terms of their agenda. So we'll see what comes next. I know that the question about the Human Rights Council special session has been asked by some journalists, and I understand from our colleagues from the Council that for the moment there is no request on that. And if things change, you will be, of course, informed. I have, in fact, a statement they have asked me to read, and it's about a meeting on the 8th of January at 10 a.m. in the Assembly Hall. But this is going to be an organizational meeting of the Human Rights Council with the election of the president for the 20th cycle from the group of Asia-Pacific states, election of vice presidents from the group of Latin American Caribbean states, and the selection of troikas for upcoming session of the UPR. This is what we have for the council now at the moment. We will see. Sorry, I'd like to give the floor to a few more people who haven't spoken yet on the platform. So I see Gorky, and then I'll come back to the room.
Oui, bonjour. J'ai deux questions. D'abord, une question, l'ONU a une obligation, je dis bien les Nations Unies ont une obligation d'équité et d'égalité. Alors, la remarque, elle est claire. Les États-Unis d'Amérique et leur président, M. Trump, ont sans aucun doute violé l'esprit des Nations Unies. D'abord, en intervenant sans autorisation du Conseil de sécurité. Donc, il n'y a aucune forme d'identification d'une situation de menace contre la paix. ni de rupture de la paix. Donc, nous sommes effectivement, en termes de droit, dans une situation d'acte d'agression. Un. Deux, les États-Unis et leur président, Trump, ont violé délibérément l'article 2 et alinéa 4 de la Charte des Nations Unies. Donc, il est évident, et ce n'est pas normal, que les Nations Unies puissent juste nous faire de la littérature sans se référer à la Charte qui est notre bien commun. Alors, deuxième question, une autre remarque. Qu'est-ce qui justifie, et c'est l'occasion pour moi humainement, de saluer la mémoire des victimes à Grand Montana. Mais dans d'autres pays, il y a des enfants qui meurent brûlés, des accidentés. Est-ce qu'il y a une norme, une base légale pour que le drapeau des Nations Unies puisse être mis en berne pour les victimes de Grand Montana et que ce même acte humanitaire n'est pas fait pour d'autres peuples et pour d'autres pays? Ce sont là mes deux questions. Je vous remercie. Elle a dit Gorki Wabdundoy pour le soleil et continent premier. Merci.
Merci beaucoup. Merci, Gorki. Alors, pour vos deux questions, sur la première, je suis assez contente qu'on est tous d'accord. On a bien ce qu'on a dit. C'est exactement ce que vous avez dit. Les actions des États membres des Nations Unies doivent être basées, doivent être prises dans les respects pleins de la Charte des Nations Unies et du droit international. On est d'accord sur ce point-là et c'est ce point-là qu'on veut absolument réitérer dans cette situation au Venezuela. Et c'est ce que le secrétaire général a fait à plusieurs reprises. Et il a dit, et là je le cite hier au Conseil de sécurité, je reste profondément inquiet que les règles du droit international n'ont pas été respectées par l'action du 3 militaire du 3 janvier. Et je pense que Ravina a bien lu la partie de la charte qui s'applique ici. Il faut, et a dit le secrétaire général, il faut réitérer que les maintiens de la sécurité et de la paix internationale dépendent sur l'engagement continu de tous les États membres d'adhérer aux provisions de la charte. Pour ce qui concerne votre deuxième question, en fait, oui, vous avez raison, et ça, c'est une question légitime. Il y a des situations dans lesquelles les drapeaux des Nations Unies sont mis en berne de façon... pas automatique, mais enfin, la décision est prise à chaque fois. Quand il y a, par exemple, un président, un chef d'État, un exercice qui décède. Et c'est une décision qui implique tous les sièges des Nations Unies. Donc, on l'a vu dans les passés, en fait, tous les, dans les cas de malheureux de décède à un chef d'État, un exercice, tous les sièges des Nations Unies vont mettre le drapeau en berne. Dans les autres cas, on a une certaine latitude qui est due au fait que, dans une situation dramatique, et je le répète, vraiment, on est vraiment proche de toutes les victimes et de toutes leurs familles, comme ça a été le cas à Grand Montana, nous nous consultons avec l'État hôte. Pardon. Donc, c'est le fait qu'on est sur le territoire suisse, mais ce n'est pas nécessairement... pour des victimes suisses. Vous le savez que les victimes de Grand Montana, malheureusement très jeunes et malheureusement étaient là. Ce n'était pas que des victimes suisses, mais de beaucoup de pays. Donc, ce n'est pas lié, en fait, au fait, au type, disons, si vous voulez, d'accident dramatique, mais le fait que ce soit sur les territoires de notre État hôte, on s'est consulté avec la mission de l'État hôte, et en signe de respect, nous avons pris cette décision, mais qui ne concerne que Genève. Donc c'est à Genève que vendredi, les drapeaux seront mis en berne. Dernière question, je pense, John Zarokostas.
Good morning and happy new year to all. My question is a follow-up to earlier questions to Ravina. Ravina, I just saw your statement that you emailed to us. In the opening paragraph, just for clarity, when you're saying it's undermine a fundamental principle, are we talking here Article 2.4 of the UN Charter, just for clarity? Thank you.
It is the UN Charter. I have to look up which exact article it is, John. Give me a few minutes and I'll write back to you.
Thank you very much. I don't think there are more questions. Maybe you can take this afterwards with John, if you don't mind. Charlotte, thank you very much, because I forgot. Yeah, sorry. 2.4. Charlotte, thanks for reminding us in the chat also of the fact that the Swiss government has declared a day of national mourning on the 9th of January. So this is also why we are doing lowering the flags on Friday. Thank you, Charlotte, for reminding us this. So thanks. I think we can thank our colleagues who have been briefing today for this first briefing of the year. Of course, we will continue monitoring the situation and send you the information that we will issue. And otherwise, I'll see you on Friday for the next briefing. Thank you very much, Ravina, Jens, and all those who have participated. Bye.